Welcome to the Main Street Business Insight Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Wagner, Chief Program Officer at Main Street America, a nonprofit leading a collaborative movement dedicated to strengthening communities through place-based economic development and community preservation. Each week, join me as I travel the country and take a deep dive into the personal journeys of downtown and neighborhood entrepreneurs, the stories that far too often go unnoticed and unheard. Whether you're a small business owner who wants to learn from your peers, or a community leader looking to better support your local business base, Main Street Business Insights is here to provide you with the tools, strategies, and personal stories to help you and all of your Main Street businesses thrive. So subscribe now and tune in every Wednesday to get inspired by the individuals driving our communities forward. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Main Street Business Insight Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Wagner, Chief Program Officer at Main Street America. And today's podcast is actually number 11. So if you caught the Spinal Tap reference, that's not the only reason why this is significant. Just acknowledging that less than 2% of all podcasts out there make it to episode 21, and we just did it. So big shout out to our marketing and comms team, and really thanks to all of our leadership at Main Street America for really supporting this important storytelling part of our work that we do. This episode in particular is going to take a look at how communities and small business owners can better understand local market conditions as part of their efforts to build more effective strategies that can strengthen or even make more resilient their local economies, in addition to really positioning business relative to market opportunities. Now, market understanding can be rather daunting. Often, I think people feel like I did back in college or in high school taking a calculus or a physics class. I just wasn't that particularly good at it. It often seemed like a purely data-driven exercise with a realm of statistical inputs. And while data can play a really crucial role in essence serving as the foundation for market understanding, effective market analysis actually goes beyond just the numbers crunching. It's really a blend of science and art, requiring deep understanding of your community, its needs, key drivers, the broader context of how it functions as a place where consumers and visitors and small businesses and organizations all sort of converge. When it's said that something is more art than science, and that's basically what I'm getting at, in the simplest terms, we're suggesting that these are forms of judgment, that as part of the decision-making process, it's not just the data as presented. One could even suggest that as a philosophy and a belief system behind this approach, that you could position it as such. So let's explore here. A market position statement is really just a brief description of your customer and our business segments and an explanation of how your district uniquely meets in the needs of the target market. Now, it's a belief that your district is very much like a product and it has competitors as such. Whether it's in consumers, shoppers, investors, new businesses, they all have many choices that they can make. And so a market positioning statement, as you might see on your screen in the podcast, you won't see it, but it's really not like a vision statement, in which most are frankly overly generic. A market positioning statement really is about addressing your competitive advantage and then allowing you to really align your district's four-point efforts in the context of Main Street in support of your brand and value proposition. Now, the second part, I think, of a general philosophy around local market understanding as an art form is that market analysis, like small businesses, don't, or at least they shouldn't, rely on one single piece of data. Think of it as like a number of different puzzle pieces, which you're trying to configure to sort of illuminate that picture, and that when analyzed in connection with one another, they sort of craft the full story or the picture of what your market is all about. Now, remember, I think one quick thing here is that your market is already there. It's present. It's not like you're necessarily creating something from scratch. Like, the market is there. It exists. Now, you can certainly begin to sort of push it in a certain direction, or, you know, visualize it in a different sort of way. But it's commonly found in the way that you look at your or explore your business mix, the level of vacancy, who's there shopping currently, what activities are taking place within the district, and how your assets are connected, or perhaps not in some ways, and we'll get to that. But keep in mind, markets are always in evolution. And we certainly saw this during the pandemic, that not only are they in evolution, but sometimes the pace of change can be quite dramatic. For some, you know, this was way too quick, and others are needing perhaps more of an injection of capital, like an incentive, something to push or catalyze and jumpstart them as a way to transition their strategy. But markets are there. They're not hidden. And simply just getting out and observing the context around how your district is operating will illuminate so much. All right, and then sort of final philosophy here before we tackle more of the art component of local market understanding is, I want you to keep in mind that your experience and know-how as place professionals or small business owners, they really make a difference. And sometimes we refer to this as gut instinct. But it does matter. You're there, you know, a lot of the time, for some more than others, of course, walking it every day, seeing who's there, who's walking into your store, perhaps. If a particular strategy feels way out of place or a bit too far of a stretch, it's likely, or at least it should be discussed in more understanding to understand the why behind that. If your gut, or it's not passing the smell test, as they also say, it's probably telling you something. And passing that smell test is just as important as understanding something like the psychographics or the retail trade growth within your community. So yes, data is important. The science aspect is important. But what it's telling you from an art perspective holds equal ground in many respects. All right, so the art of community market understanding really shows itself, I think, in two fundamental ways. And so we're gonna tackle each one of them separately. The first one being really around going from interpreting the data to then actually developing strategy from that, or strategies from that. So I've got an example here. While it may seem counterintuitive, quantitative data collected in a market analysis typically either confirms or leads to further questions, but it doesn't really like lead the effort, okay? Rather than presenting itself on the surface kind of a clear picture, it doesn't tell you exactly what the strategy should be, what direction it takes. It really is an art form of being able to interpret that data. And so the graphic here on your left-hand side is from Esri. They're a big data house. A lot of people in market analysis, you may be familiar with Esri as a way to secure some data around a particular location or a geographic trade area that you've delineated. And what this particular graphic is looking at is what's called a retail trade projection over 5 years. And you can see I kind of got an arrow running here of the overall trade growth during that time period of about 8.4%. Now, on the surface, that perhaps doesn't look very strong, okay? And the reason being is that this particular data set looks at the basis of that retail trade growth is really based on population growth. And the way census, you know, we're looking at the census is really the difference between births versus deaths. But something profound has happened over the past, 4 years that really has changed the equation and made it much more complex or difficult to simply look at things based on birth versus deaths. And that's being that we've had tremendous amount of population migration through the United States. In fact, just a quick kind of like factoid here. Rural economies in particular, so this really underestimates rural economies, they have typically shown population losses within census data, if you just looked at that. And despite the fact that 37% of rural counties actually grew more than 2% from 2020 to 2022 because of remote work, frankly. And given that remote workers typically bring 3 to 4 times the income levels compared to local incomes, there can be great enhancements of available retail shopping, food shopping, professional service, et cetera, spending capacity within the community. The graphic to your right is something that can help illuminate that a little bit more, and that's coming from the IRS. They do each year, although they haven't released 2020 data yet, but they put out by county what's called migration data. That first column you see is actually the number of new filings in your particular county, this being Wise County is my example here in Virginia. And then the second column is the number of people that represents. So for a rural county like Wise County, an additional almost 1,300 more people is a big deal. And then the third column there that you can see, the 22,764, that's actually with 3 zeros. So that's an additional 23 million. So if you're not seeing this and you're listening on the podcast, we'll put in the show notes the link to the IRS migration data. But it's very important, specifically in rural economies, to kind of just better understand what's happening there. But just as important in knowing that is what does that actually mean? And that's the art part. So now we've seen two pieces of data, or looked at two pieces of data, which is sort of the science aspect, but it still doesn't tell you necessarily how you might react to that or how to plan strategy. For instance, is 1,200 or 1,300 new individuals, is that dollar figure that's being brought in, is that a large enough market to focus on? For smaller rural counties, something like that may represent 10%, 5%. Those may be big numbers. How might that impact housing? Do we need a strategy to address? Because now we're going to have pinch points, if we didn't already, in the level of housing or rental rates. What is the level of Airbnb activity? Has that been surfacing, which we saw a lot of during the pandemic? And do we now need a policy to sort of control or manage that so we're not having further crunches on housing? Is there enough to support a co-work venue or some sort of hybrid third space as a result of this influx of new remote work or the new population growth? What about the potential impacts on downtown rental rates? Or could we have displacement of our existing businesses from, you know, new folks coming in and wanting to start businesses as well and driving up rental rates more than the market currently could bear? And then finally, just as another example of kind of the questions to ask in an art form is, what shifts in consumer spending and supportable new business niches might be based on those new customer groups? What's their psychographics like? So understanding all of that is part of the art then of being able to position that in terms of strategy. Okay, number two in sort of the art of market analysis interpretation to strategy is recognizing that qualitative data is just as important as quantitative data. So qualitative often being thought of as more the art side of data collection. But in this particular case, and how we think of it in market understanding, is sometimes the data can illuminate where you might want to go deeper. You might want to ask more questions about particular data points. Having people around a table or being able to interview perhaps do a survey, but most importantly, focus, interviews, the qualitative data can be so important. It gives you the ability to go deeper and ask additional questions that might illuminate the situation or provide additional insight that you just can't pick up in just looking at quantitative data only. Thirdly is understanding of macro trends. Now, no district exists within a bubble. I think that's really important to recognize. And more macro trends can have tremendous impact on your particular district. And we saw, again, during the pandemic, how macro trends in, for instance, like consumer shifts might delineate now how we serve consumers in a restaurant setting, or now they want more dining out. There are generational shifts. We're at what we call peak 65, which in 2024 simply means that this will be the year of which we have the greatest retirements happening within the baby boomer generation. That's going to cause extreme shifts because of the generation pullbacks in spending, perhaps from baby boomers, new spending habits, social media habits, et cetera, of a new entire generation. Technology shifts, you know, what will happen with AI, for instance, and how does that impact our district? And even the way that we work, as I was chatting about remote work or hybrid work, can cause a big shift or just decline in workforce and the continuing sort of pains that might cause in small businesses needing to hire people. Okay, let's move on now to really the second component of the art of local market understanding. And what we think of there is the place matters in the form of design, okay? The design context, the spatial elements of our place actually can really illuminate decision points about the market. Okay, so much of the art of local market understanding comes in on-site context setting. As someone that has done a number of different market studies during my time, I would never do one if I hadn't seen the particular district. I wouldn't do it in a vacuum, simply looking at data. Because the context of the site, the way the buildings, the small businesses, the mix, that all matters to making certain decisions. And so let's explore how that can occur. This is an example that I'm going to be using for the podcast listeners out there of Alta Vista, Virginia. And even though it's a small downtown, design can often cause sort of huge shifts in how we think about consumers using that particular district or downtown. And in this particular case, I'm showing three graphics here, one of sort of a Google map showing two different nodes. We call this nodal development. And really what it is signifying that there are different market strategies at work here, even though it's a small downtown or a small district. And so that doesn't necessarily matter when the downtown spatially is configured so differently, Okay. Yes, in bigger downtowns or even other smaller ones, it could look similarly, but may have different assets or a different business mix, and that could cause nodal development changes. In the particular case of Alta Vista, and I'm sure like many, and what happens here is in one node, you've got greater density and concentration in a different sort of setback and scale of the buildings versus another part of the district that's more kind of like auto-centric, lots more setbacks. The scale of buildings is different, like one story versus two and three stories. It's less dense. And the business mix shifts dramatically, where you have more professional services and fast food and gas, you know, versus more sort of like strolling shopping, restaurants, dining, cultural activities, that sort of thing. And so for that reason, we have two different nodes and two different strategies. But the key point is that the data wouldn't necessarily show that. You actually have to visualize it. You have to be there. You have to look at the business mix. You can't get that by understanding psychographics or even retail trade trends or demographic trends over time. This is a spatial example. And that's why, again, the art, not just the data points, become so, so important. Data may also demonstrate certain market opportunities, but you may not understand whether there is the assets to truly drive those opportunities in the form of like natural or built or economic or even societal asset forms. In this particular case, what I looked at was, as an example, was the retail projections in a community, a fictitious community of restaurant and drinking establishments. Again, this data would come from Esri, and it would be in the retail trade projections, the five-year projections, okay? The example I'm using suggests that restaurants and drinking establishments over that five-year period of time would grow by 6.1 million. Okay, on the surface, that doesn't tell you much, right? Like, okay, I get it's gonna grow in that. I could share it with my small business owners, but what would that really mean from, you know, my district's perspective? Well, in general, we would first establish, well, what could I capture of that? If that's new growth, my district probably can't capture it all, of course. It will go to other places. It might go to other districts within the city or the town or what have you. So depending on how strong I feel or how much I capture currently, I'm just putting in a 20%. So 20% of 6.1 million, now I'm doing math, okay? This is the science aspect of it. That's roughly 1.2 million. Now, most business types or business segments, you can go online, simply do a Google search, and you can find out what is the average per square foot, sales per square foot of that kind of business type, whether it's hardware, restaurants in this particular case, bike stores, bookstores, you name it. You can basically go online and there's some accounting firm or industry association that has looked at sales per square foot averages as a benchmark for certain retail or professional service operations. In this particular case, I used a 150. There are several for restaurants, so I went sort of the middle of the road here. And when you divide the 1.2 million that I could capture in new sales by that 150, it shows that I could support 8,133 square foot. Okay. Now I'm getting a little bit somewhere. Now I know, you know, how big the size could be of what I could support, which might be multiple kinds of restaurants, right, at 8,000 square feet. Probably not one that would be 8,000 square feet. But it still doesn't illuminate other parts, okay? So data's great, and it got me this far. But the art comes in when I'm trying to understand things like, well, what type of restaurants then? You know, what's customer niches, or where do I have like other growth opportunities or cultural amenities that might be able to leverage new eating opportunities or sporting activities or events? Were there any declines in my office market post-COVID? So, you know, I may see increasing demand, but in my particular district, if I was heavy on office and people are now remote working, it may not reflect the true opportunity within my district because I lost a key market that would have serviced those particular businesses. Do I have the building stock conducive? You know, that's a whole other thing that data is not going to illuminate. You know, what's my property owner situation? What's the condition of the buildings? And what's the aim? Am I looking for someone to move in that's coming from somewhere else? Is this a startup activity? And I should think about ways to grow to filling that space, like more startup activities, food trucks or shared food kitchen opportunities. Maybe that's really where I should put my resources to kind of build up to that space demand over the 5-year period of time. Again, that's kind of where the art part of this shows up. Third, sometimes the data just doesn't illuminate design barriers. You know, we're not looking at, when you're looking at the data from Esri or Placer or the IRS data or whatever data form you're pulling, it can't see and visualize the context of the place, okay? And a great example, I'll go back to my Alta Vista, Virginia. Now everyone's going to want to go and visit so they can kind of see this market data at play. But what's fascinating there is when you look at assets that might represent consumers to be drawn to that downtown or that particular commercial district, in this particular case, the photo on the left, and again, you can't see this on the podcast, but what it is, it's called English Park. They've got a wonderful splash pad. They host tons of events and activities there. It's in very close proximity to the downtown. You might even be able to visualize it from downtown. But lo and behold, what is in between that great asset that drives consumers to the community and potentially downtown, that in the downtown, what lies between is a railroad track. And there is a kind of an experiential pedestrian footbridge that you can go across. But there are visual issues or impediments there between that and the downtown in this particular park. And also physical impediments in that there's no elevator access. And there are a lot of steps as well. And so even though this is a great attempt, it definitely sort of stifles and puts up a barrier to making those connections between your downtown and what could be a market coming to another sort of asset feature. All right. So very important that you think about the design barriers, and that's the art form of understanding the market. Another great example, this one from Galax, Virginia. You can tell I live in Virginia and I've done some recent work in Virginia, so I'm using these examples, is that asset connectivity illuminating these markets can go undetected in data. All right. So this is another classic form of where they knew, this is the art, this particular community knew that in a particular park that there was this wonderful, wonderful event happening. 30,000 folks generally come to this old Fiddler's convention. Okay, it's held in Feltz Park. And for those that are watching this on YouTube, you can see this graphic in the circle around Feltz Park. But they were feeling, this was the gut, that it wasn't having as much impact as they thought it could, and they couldn't figure out why. And we were able to use data in the form of Placer AI data, which is another graphic I put here, looking at the date that it was held, and looking then at the downtown where we were driving the Placer data, we could see that during the time of this event, in fact, they were right. It wasn't having that much impact. Great impact on the community, but in terms of the district market, it wasn't necessarily having that much impact. And the biggest event that was held in downtown, a barbecue event, and that had massive. It was their largest day volume of traffic within the particular downtown. One other example is the New River Trail. It's very close to downtown, but you actually have to walk up a hill or ride your bike up a pretty large hill, and there's Highway 58 that divides the trailhead and downtown proper. So it's really important to keep in mind that even though you may have wonderful assets, driving traffic, things like sidewalk or road conditions, the lack of wayfinding signage, or insular event areas, kind of like campus where they don't leave, or highway or train crossings, can take what you're seeing in the data and really make that opportunity a design fix or a needed design fix more than a market sort of fix to it. Okay. And so again, these are really sort of art forms where if you don't know that and you're not seeing that, because the data is not showing it, you're left kind of wondering what's going on here. Why aren't we getting the boost that we should? And so again, context really matters in all of these cases. Okay. So the last part of this, and really it's kind of the moral of the story, is that the community and as sets of Main Street leaders, your opinion and knowledge about the district is imperative to market understanding in the development of your transformation strategies or market strategies that enable us, you know, you to drive your work. Having the data like Esri or Placer AI, they're very illuminating, but as you can see hopefully through this episode, that they kind of are only like half the story. And so it truly is kind of like the art and science, or the science and art of market understanding, that's so important. So don't leave that out of it. Recognize that your knowledge as a local board member or economic vitality member or staff is just as important as that consultant you're hiring, someone from our team or what have you. It's that coming together, the qualitative and quantitative, that makes so much sense and can illuminate and create stronger, more realistic transformation strategies and market strategies for your downtown. So, as always, as a business owner, or likewise to my place professional colleagues out there, I hope this episode has provided plenty of new insights and solutions and inspiration. And as consumers, please continue to support your local businesses and please tell their stories. They're so important to our local and national economies, and more importantly, they promote and provide quality of living to the places we all call home. That's going to do it for this week's episode. Remember to check out the recording and other related films of the podcast we've been doing over this season two. You can check that out on our Main Street America YouTube channel. As always, thanks for listening. Please rate and review us, as you can see on the video in my graphic here. And be sure to tell your family and friends and colleagues when you'll actually be able to come up, catch us on season three, of course. We'll be announcing that shortly. But we're going to have some special edition content coming from our national conference. It's going to be held in Birmingham in early May, where we'll be recording a live podcast with Alicia Levels Moore, founder of Polaris, a co-work and an entrepreneurial event center in Birmingham's Woodlawn neighborhood. So be sure not to miss that. And we plan to follow that podcast with a chat with the winner of our Mary Means Leadership Award. So that's going to be announced at conference. I'm not going to give that away, but post-conference we'll be featuring the winner there. So plan to be there, and plan, of course, to listen post-conference. And as always, thanks for all your support.